Hey guys, welcome to the Martial and Healing Arts channel. I'm Rafe Kelly, founder of Evolve Move Play. I'm extremely excited to be sponsoring this channel. Martial and Healing Arts have been key aspects of embodiment and self-cultivation for thousands of years. I have some of my best friends in the industry, Rory Miller, Matt Thornton, Edward Hines, presenting here, and I'm really excited to share what they have to say with you guys. You're gonna love it. So Evolve Move Play is an ecology of practices of movement, mindfulness, nature connection, and community. And within the movement, we have a big emphasis on moving in nature and being able to do parkour. We also like to lift weights and throw things around, but there's a huge aspect of martial arts, and I've been training martial arts since I was 6 years old. So it's really exciting to be able to sponsor this channel in particular. If you're interested in my work, check out my talks on the Main Stage and the Movement Anatomy channel. If you can't get to either of those live, you can check us out at Rafe Kelly on Instagram, get all your awesome embodiment giveaways, and for now, just enjoy this amazing channel. It's gonna be an awesome show.
Welcome everybody. We are here with Georgia Ferry. She's a martial artist. She has a black belt in karate. She's a kickboxer. She does competition, but she also advocates for empowering women. She's the founder of the Fight Back Project, an online trauma-informed kickboxing program for female-identified survivors of violence. She also has the Fight Back podcast. Check it out. Happy to have you here, Georgia. The stage is yours.
Thank you so much, Roma, and thank you so much, everyone, for taking the time to come along to this presentation. If you're watching it live or if you're watching the replay, there's so many amazing presenters on the Embodiment Conference. So the fact that you're choosing to spend an hour of your time coming to hear what I have to say just means so much to me. So I really hope you get something valuable out of this presentation. For those of you who are here live, if you have any questions, jump in. I really want you to get the information out of me that you are hoping to get. So let's make it as much about you as possible. I have a presentation, so I'm going to chuck it up. You'll still be able to see me though, and it's going to be very dynamic. We're going to be back and forth between being active and listening to a presentation. So I'll just share my screen. Okay, so like I said, welcome to Kickboxing for Trauma Survivors. I have been just obsessed with the question lately of why it is that so many people say martial arts saved me. And really, that is the center of the Fight Back podcast, is asking this question: why do so many people involved in combat sports say it saved their life? You know, from things like keeping them away from drugs and keeping them off the street and giving them an anger outlet and giving them a sense of community. I just found that there are so many reasons why people seem to find refuge in martial arts. But today's presentation isn't about the why. It is about the how. So today we're going to talk about how we can use some of the essential characteristics of martial arts to with trauma. Sorry, my slides are a little bit slow, but today I want to talk about the three reasons that I believe that trauma-informed kickboxing is going to be mainstream in 5 years. As big of a name as trauma-informed yoga, I promise. We're going to talk about trauma physiology, and we're going to talk about it in the context of sporting performance. So I want to say another big thank you to everyone who commented on my post on Facebook. I wanted to find out what kind of level of the information you all wanted me to put into this presentation. And the majority of you were saying you did want me to talk about trauma physiology. There were some who were kind of agreeing with what I thought in the back of my mind, which might have been, we've learned about it so much in the Embodiment Conference, and I didn't want to be repeating myself. So I've tried to think about a bit of a different way to display the information, and hopefully you enjoy that. We're going to talk about the thing that I think you're probably most here to hear about, which is how we create a trauma-informed kickboxing program. And in my mind, there are lots of things, but there are three main things that we do to create a trauma-informed kickboxing session. And like I said, it's going to be really hands-on. So to explain what I mean by that, if you guys would like, you can get up and do some kickboxing with me. I would certainly love if you would join me, but No pressure, no obligation. You can sit and watch if that's what feels best for you, however you want to participate in this presentation. And like I said, hit me up with questions at any time. Roma can tap me on the shoulder and just say, stop talking, Georgia, there's a question, because I just really want you to get what you want to get out of this presentation.
And if attendees, if you want to join the session, please raise your electronic hand and we'll get you on the panel. When we do exercises, you'll be viewed by Georgia, but other people won't be able to see you on the live stream. So welcome.
Yes, definitely. So like I said, I think that the future of kickboxing and martial arts is being more trauma-informed. And to me, there are three key elements to that. And so the first, I've put up this quote from Bessel van der Kolk, who of course is the holy grail of trauma-informed, right? And he has said, studying martial arts makes perfect sense from a trauma point of view. And I just so totally agree with him on that. So just gonna let me click. When you're doing martial arts, when I'm talking about kickboxing, I'm talking about all martial arts, but I'm just gonna say kickboxing for this presentation because it's what it's about. You have no choice but to be fully present. If you're hitting pads with somebody, with your partner, you're so engaged in what you're doing that you don't have time to be thinking about what happened earlier on in the day or in your life or what you're gonna be doing later. It really creates an environment where you have to be present. From a somatic experiencing point of view, I think learning to fight is perfect for a way of releasing trauma. So somatic experiencing would teach us that one of the reasons why we experience such physiological distress after trauma is because there are unfinished actions stored within our bodies. So for the example of someone who's experienced violence, there are many reasons why they might not have been able to fight back. There could be physical restraints. There could have been emotional restraints. It could have been coming from a partner, right? Someone that they love. There could be financial restraints. The person might have control of their finances. So there are many reasons why in a traumatic situation or a violent situation, we can't fight back. But if we can allow our bodies to act through those motions, then that's incredibly healing. On that wavelength, feeling safe and in charge of your body for possibly the first time is super healing, right? You get to feel that you're allowed to choose when you want to punch, when you want to kick, how you want to do that. And you get to experience your body as this powerful, amazing thing that wants to look after you instead of being scared and ashamed and, you know, angry with your body if that is the type of thing that you've been consistently thinking over and over again, right? The second reason why I think that trauma-informed kickboxing is going to take over the world is because martial arts attract people that have trauma. You know, in my experience with the podcast, in my experience in doing martial arts since I was 12, a lot of the people I came across were battling demons, and they came to martial arts for an outlet, for an escape, you know, somewhere to channel all that emotion. So anyone watching this who is a coach, your students have trauma, I promise. Anyone watching this who's a martial artist, your friends who you train with, some of them have trauma. Maybe you have trauma. And so I think as we acknowledge this more and more, to better look after our friends and to better look after our students, we will want to become more trauma-informed so that we can consider how they feel when they're being held, you know, in a wrist lock or something like that, or when they're being hit in sparring. So we're doing these very full-on activities. And for some of the people we're working with, it's very intense and they are struggling. So I think we'll just become more trauma-informed to better look after our friends.
And there's a question, Georgia.
Yes.
Maria, she's 58 and not that fit, but I've been thinking lately about martial arts. What is an easy form of martial arts to start with for trauma?
Well, I'm pretty biased. I think, you know, There's a perception that you need to be fit before you can start doing something like kickboxing. It seems much more full on than something like, you know, Aikido or one of the more, we'll call them the soft martial arts. But I think when you learn a martial art in a trauma-informed way, which is, and we'll talk about this more, Maria, but where you get to make the choices about the intensity that you want to work at, it becomes so doable and it's so exciting and empowering. In my mind, it's such an incredible thing to kick something hard and punch something hard. And in my program, we kick and punch the air. And on your point with trauma, a lot of my clients have chronic pain that tends to come with trauma. And there are many talks about that on this channel. A lot of them are quite overweight. You know, they've been sedentary for a long time. And a lot of that is because of their trauma. And they have excelled doing this program. So if, I mean, my opinion is very, very biased. And I would say you should come and do a one-on-one session with me. We'll talk more about this at the end and just try this, or even just join in this session and see how it feels. But I would also say, just try anything. You just have to speak up and say, this is what I can't do, if you feel comfortable enough to be able to do that. So I think at 58, you know, quite unfit, background of trauma, get involved in some kind of martial art. But I would be happy to talk to you about how you can, of course, get involved with mine. And, you know, a big part of that comes to my next point and why I think doing a trauma-informed program might be best for you, is because there's a whole area of physiology, as in what happens in our bodies, that we need to understand if we want to work with people with trauma. And this should be exciting for all the martial artists, to get a good sporting performance. And this is one of the things I think a lot of coaches are missing. So let's talk about a situation where someone's being attacked. Their body will go through a hierarchy of responses in order to save them. And understand this, safety is your body's number one priority at all times. So it will choose to look after you above all kinds of rational things. So first thing your body will try and do if you're being attacked by someone is utilize your social engagement system. And it can only do this when you're within your window of tolerance. And what I mean by that is when you are able to use the rational frontal lobe, the front part of your brain, which can make logical decisions. And that's when you'll try things like reasoning with your attacker. Very quickly, either if you try that and it doesn't work, or more commonly, you just decide that's not even an option, you will go into your sympathetic nervous system, which is what we call hyperarousal, which is our fight or flight. You'll look around. Do I have an escape route? Maybe no. Look at the attacker. Do I think I could fight them off? Maybe no. And then you'll switch to your third line of defense, which is to activate the dorsal vagus nerve and freeze. Freezing or playing dead is our best bet in a lot of situations where we're in grave danger. Sometimes that's associated with dissociation. So you might float up, you know, metaphorically float up to the sky, watch yourself from a third person point of view and see the trauma happening to you, but feel separate from it. You might go numb and you might decide that, you know, my body and all our bodies, they send us emotions and pain to try to generate an action. But if we decide that action is not going to be beneficial to us, then there's no point in sending those signals anymore. And so we cut it off. Okay, so that's when we go into our freeze. Another theory that we consider when we think about sporting performance is what's called the inverted U hypothesis. And stay with me because they're related. Okay, we used to think that there was a linear relationship like that, if you can see my mouse, between performance and arousal. And arousal being how high your heart rate is, how physiologically switched on you are, right? How hyped up you are. And then we realized that there's a cognitive element to sport. And so there's actually this upside down U, that's where the name comes from, relationship between performance and arousal. So the more aroused you get, the better your performance gets to a point, and then it will start to decline. This is hypoarousal, right? This is the window of tolerance, and this is hyperarousal. So if we put them together, then they might look like this. And so for athletes, it's really important to have an understanding of this, because when you're feeling really, really stressed or emotional in a competition, you need self-regulation to be able to get you back to here. If you're the kind of fighter who has beautiful technique in the gym, but then comes into a fight and just can't switch on, you need self-regulation techniques to get you into here. And that means knowing how to pay attention to your body. It means understanding what this zone and this zone starts to feel like when it's coming on, as opposed to when it's fully taking over and making the decisions for you. Because remember, in here, we're using our rational brain. Here, we're acting emotionally, we're acting automatically. So then we're using this system, we can do things like noticing that our opponent is dropping their hand when they go to kick us and set things up and start to score points in that way. When we're here, all we're thinking is emotion. I hate this person. I want to kill them. I want to hit them as hard as I can. And here we're not present. We're not switched on. We're not feeling anything. We're not connected to the opponent. We're just out of it. We're spacey, right? We're numb. So we want to be in here for a good sporting performance. What we'll find going forward, I think, as people get better and better at the physiological side of athleticism, as in the training side, is that the athletes who are great are the ones who will understand self-regulation. They'll know how to self-regulate and how to bring themselves into their window of tolerance.
There's another question before you go on. So Maria just said, how can I find a teacher in Sydney? But I think
she
asked, how can I find a teacher that teaches what you do in Sydney? But I think you're also doing online classes, isn't it?
Yeah, so I exclusively teach online classes. I'm in Melbourne, and so that COVID kind of initiated that, but I love that my clients can turn their camera off when they want and they can be in the comfort of their own homes. You know, they can wear what they want. They don't have any travel time, so it's much easier for them to fit it into their day. And I'm kind of converted to the online version of teaching it. You know, I think it really creates such a safe environment. So I don't know anyone who is teaching this in person in Sydney, but you are more than welcome to join my online classes. And I guess to that point, you know, why hasn't trauma-informed kickboxing taken off? Why can't you find someone in Sydney? Why isn't everyone doing this all over the world if it makes so much sense, right? Bessel van der Kolk says it makes so much sense. Why hasn't it taken off? And I think there's a lot of fear. And I think a lot of people imagine that someone with trauma, if they do a kickboxing program, they're going to get triggered. And there's a few things that I want to say to that. Essentially, two points. The second point that I'm going to get to is that we can plan for that. And when we follow a set of principles and make a program trauma-informed, the risk of being triggered, I think, is very low. But the second point that I want to make to that is not my point at all. It comes from a researcher from Brock University, her name is Kathy Van Ingen, and we'll get across to her in a moment. But she talked about people who have experienced trauma, they have a smaller window of tolerance, right? It takes much less to trigger them. We want to try and keep them inside of this zone, but they're going to get triggered anyway. So see if this is going to work.
One, two is a yeah, you're probably in a subway. You're going to get triggered watching a TV show. You're going to get triggered when there's a certain smell. So we don't protect them from what is already happening from them. We don't pretend to do that. But what would you say is, you're going to be safe in here, and you have control over what happens when you feel that way. So
I feel like she said it all. But the other thing that we want to think about is, okay, if it's the fact that you're in a trauma-informed program, right, every other student, so for example, in my program, 4 women per class, you know everyone else has experienced trauma. So you know that if you dissociate in class, they're like, oh, yeah, whatever. Someone in class mentions dissociation in my programs at least once a class. It's not a big deal to them because they've all lived it. Right, in Kathy's program, Kathy runs a program in Vancouver. If anyone's watching from Canada, hit her up. She's amazing. Their program has seen over 1,000 women, and it's a safe space. If you want to cry when you're on the heavy bag, it's okay, you know, but you can know that it's a safe place for you to ride that wave of emotion, right? As what they would say in somatic experiencing is that the emotion's going to come anyway. You can... it can crush you or you can ride it. And I think knowing that you're in an environment where it's normal to be triggered really, really helps take the fear out of that. And the other thing that we want to do is just go really slow. So when you go to a normal kickboxing class, you're going to get told, all right, up we go. We're going to go jab, cross, hook, left kick, left punch. All right, then your opponent's going to block the punch, and then you, right? It's so many things to take in all at once, not to mention that you're holding pads for somebody, which means they're going to be punching into the pads that you're holding, and there's so many things happening all at once. We don't need to do all that. We can strip it right back and really just focus on one thing per class. Slowly add in more and more techniques as you're feeling more comfortable. You still end up at the same end result. It's kind of like if anyone watched Peter Levine when he had the slinky and he was talking about going from here to here all in one go, or, you know, slowly working your way up to it. You still ended up with the slinky just as stretched, but it wasn't such a big difference from A to B. And so it feels more manageable. The other thing that I want to talk about is related to this book here, which I need to give a big shout out to Monique if she's watching or watching the replay on this, who I met through the Embodiment Conference, who has said to me, you need to look into the work of David Emerson. He is incredible. He has founded trauma-sensitive yoga. I think you could use a lot of the principles in your program. So at first, I was just going in blind. David Emerson teaches that there are 3 things, well, I took away from this, 3 things that we need to incorporate in order to make the program trauma-informed, and those are interoception, choice, and being present. So along with going really, really slowly, we're constantly coming back to these things. So interoception is your perception of sensations inside your body. So it's how I can feel that I'm sitting in a chair. It's how I know that it's what, 6:30 or so probably. So I'm starting to get hungry. Yep. It's how I know that, you know, I'm cold, how I know I'm hot. It's anything from inside of your body that you sense. And your brain gets a constant flood of information from mechanoreceptors, baroreceptors, chemoreceptors, telling it, you know, what is the pH of my blood? How acidic am I? How much oxygen do I have? How much tension is there on my stomach? Do I need to go pee because my bladder's feeling like it's expanded? And the brain filters through all of that information and then decides what to bring into your consciousness. It's really, really important that we are able to interocept for our well-being. After trauma, there are 2 common pathways that interoception gets damaged. One is that the physical sensations associated with trauma are overwhelming. They feel so intense. And because the part of your brain that knew the trauma was in the past isn't functioning properly, they feel, or they make the trauma when you relive it, feel like it's happening right now. And so what happens is, because you're constantly being bombarded with these internal sensations of pain, of disgust, of, you know, the churning stomach, the butterflies in the stomach, you start to have this relationship to your body where you feel helpless, you know, you hate yourself, you hate your body, and your body just becomes this unsafe place for you. And the other thing that happens, like we said about dissociation, is that you stop being able to feel anything. So we want to say thank you, body, so much for blocking out the awful things when they happened. But now you're blocking out everything. So, you know, people can't feel hunger. They can't feel touch. When they hug their children, they can't feel that. And that leads to depression, that leads to anxiety, that leads to a whole host of things where we just feel awful because we can't feel anything, we're numbed. And so what we want to try and do is create experiences where people who have experienced trauma can experience interoception in a neutral way, right? Something as simple as just noticing their feet on the floor. That, you know, and the way that we do that in trauma-informed kickboxing is with the word notice, right? I've stolen this from David Emerson, and it works so well in my program. So I'm constantly offering the word notice to my fighters. And I say my fighters as if when my coach talks about me as a kickboxer, he'll say his fighters, I say the same thing. So when we do the warm-up, I'm asking you to notice the chair that you're sitting in. Can you notice a stretch in the muscle? Can you notice a feeling activating? When we go through the technique section of class, I'm asking you to notice those same muscles working, that same stretch happening. I'm asking you to see if you can feel that you're starting to get muscle fatigue, you know, because we're punching the same punch over and over again. We go through and do an interval section where we're doing maybe 15 or 30 seconds of intensity, and then we're having a rest period. And again, what do you notice during the intensity? And do you notice the floor and your heartbeat and your breath in the recovery time, which is a grounding practice in and of itself? And then same as the warm up in the cool down. So we're constantly interjecting all these times to think, you know, what do I notice in my body? Creating all these opportunities for interoception. And this is one of the key differences between trauma-sensitive yoga and trauma-informed kickboxing, is that in trauma-sensitive yoga, there's a big focus on having no right or wrong. In trauma-informed kickboxing, we still have that. And we'll say that, you know, if you can't feel your shoulder when you stretch like this, that's okay. Can you change the movement? What if you change it again? You still can't feel it, then that's fine, because you're still sending that neural signal to the muscle that says, you know, hello, is this thing there? Are you there? And that's slowly going to strengthen over time. But we do have an objective, which is to feel certain muscles, because we're trying to learn certain techniques. So one of the things that I think trauma-sensitive yoga doesn't have, the kickboxing does, is the sense of mastery, right? We're learning specific techniques. So we have a little bit more of a right or wrong, but certainly it's not a situation where I'm saying, oh, you're doing that wrong. It's I'm asking you to feel it, and then we have a conversation around it if you can't. Same as when we're doing the techniques. If you feel like you can't do it properly, if you feel like the movement feels wrong, then we talk about why it feels wrong, what you think it should look like, how we can change your body to get it to that point. And so that's one of the key differences that I did want to point out. I think there was a question. Did a question pop up, Roma?
Yes, it did. It's like, what equipment do I need at home to do your classes?
Zero equipment at home to do classes. And you're going to get to experience that today. So, if you like, you could stand up and we can try out the kickboxing stance.
Georgia, can we maybe stop your presentation for a sec and then people can see your full screen?
This is a good idea.
You can see the panelists as well. There are a few.
Oh,
Hopefully you can see most of my full body. If you miss a little bit of my head, that's okay. I'm gonna raise my voice because I know I'm far back from the microphone. But if you like, you could experiment first with making yourself as big as possible, as tall as possible, as stretched up as you could imagine. So you might like to involve your arms in that. Maybe you want to reach up to the sky. Maybe you want to stretch your head up to the roof. Maybe you feel your spine lengthening. Can you notice what that feels like? Maybe you step up on your tippy toes. And when you're ready, you can curl up into a ball as small as you can make yourself. But just notice how that changes things here. So for me, I feel so much more powerful like this because my knees are bent, I can feel my glutes are working, I can feel my legs are burning. It feels like there's power, but it doesn't feel like I can do anything with it. So when you're ready, you could experiment with a position that's in the middle. So maybe now your torso feels up tall and you feel that longness in your spine, but you also feel the weight dropped into your legs and you feel the power in your legs. Just notice what it feels like to stand here. This is your kickboxing stance. And we could build on this even. So if you like, you could experiment with different heights to hold your arms. So we want to protect our face in kickboxing. So possibly you could try having your hands up really high. You could try having them down at your chin. You could have one up and one down. Have a play and see where it feels right for you. For me, I'm thinking kind of here, in the middle. Notice any power coiled up in your hands. I can feel my biceps tensing, my forearms tensing. And then our final step might be to put ourselves a little bit more side on. So we want to make our target a bit smaller for kickboxing so that our opponent can't score. So if you like, you can see what it's like to stand fully side on, or you could stand slightly side on. I like to stand, I think about here, but experiment with how side on you want to be. And now let's just notice. So you might be able to feel power in your legs. You might feel that your body wants to twist from side to side. And then you might notice some muscles here and here, your obliques switching on. And perhaps you can notice that tension in your shoulders, curled up and ready to punch. That's a kickboxing stance. You're all kickboxers now. Let's come back to the presentation. So one thing you might have noticed, see how I use notice, is that I'm constantly using phrases like if you like, when you're ready, when we're doing trauma-informed kickboxing. And this is because trauma can be referred to as an extreme lack of choice. There's research showing that no one would choose to be traumatized. No one would choose these kind of awful situations. And so, we want to create situations where people get to make choices, right? Like I said, where they get to feel like they're in charge of their body. And this is one of the key things that I think all trauma-sensitive practices that are currently really popular and widespread do really well. So
in trauma-sensitive yoga, incorporate a lot of choices about, you know, similar language when you're ready, if you like, options within different poses. They don't use any hands-on corrections to the postures because it's how you want to put your body, right? In drama therapy, if it was just you going in and getting a script and, you know, learning your lines, that wouldn't be very therapeutic. And in dance movement therapy, if you were just given a dance routine and told to repeat it, again, you wouldn't be expressing yourself. And so when I created the Fight Back Project, we wanted to look at how we could incorporate choices into the program. And we do that through language. So we use language like, if it's gonna flick over, there we go. If you like, I invite you, when you're ready. And it just gives you pause to think, do I want to do that stretch that George is telling me to do? You know, do I want to do that punch? Do I want to do that kick? And when you ask yourself that, and then you give yourself permission, so low the likelihood that you will get triggered because you're the one who's choosing to do it, right? And you'll see as we go through this class today some more options that we're going to give you for choices. If you like, you can all close your eyes. So you don't have to stand up unless you want to. You don't have to sit down unless you want to. You could sit on the floor if you wanted to. But if you want to do some kickboxing with me, I often start my classes with a centering process. So you might like to place your attention on your feet. This is what I do every time before I go out to fight because my feet are always bare and so I can always feel the texture of the ground and that's incredibly soothing to me. So here I can notice the floor is very smooth. Sometimes I like to notice if one foot feels heavier than the other foot or if one foot's catching my attention more than the other. And if that's happening for you, perhaps you might like to rest your attention on one foot or both feet, whatever feels good for you. And if you like, you could put your attention into the chair you're sitting in, or you could stay in your feet if you're standing up, or if you're sitting on the ground, place your attention on the ground. And here you might like to notice all the places where you can feel contact with the chair or the ground or whatever you have contact with. So I can notice the small of my back. I can notice my glutes. I can notice the back of my hamstrings. And I can notice the back of my hands against my legs. And I can notice my legs on the back of my hands. And now when you're ready, if you like, you can open your eyes. And so you might like to pull one knee up to your chest. So here you can be in charge of how high you want to pull the knee. So you might like to pull it up just a little bit. Maybe you want to pull it up all the way, whatever feels good for you. This is the start of a kick. And that's what we're going to build up to today if you want to join me. So here, just noticing what you can feel in your legs. So for me, I can notice a tightness in my hip flexors. I can notice, you know, a tightness in my glutes. I can notice that my legs feel tired today. That's okay. And when you're ready, you can let that stretch go and let it relax. And if you like, we could try the other leg and see what you notice on this side. So if anyone wants to unmute and share what they're feeling, please do so. Here I can notice that this leg usually feels tighter than the left, but today I think they're both just pretty tight. Probably need to go over to the yoga channel more. I definitely can notice in the front of my hip when I pull this up.
Yeah, Georgia, this is a webinar setup, so attendees can't open up their mic, but they can join the panel if they would like to ask a question. Just raise their electronic hand and then we'll let you in to ask questions. I think we're 20 minutes till end of session. So you have like 15 to round up, and then I'll do the closing and you have a last word. So you have some time.
Cool.
Less. It's 10 to 12.
All good. All right. If you like, you could let this one go. Relax. I'm just going to sit back so you can see my legs. So the next stretch we can try is just extending your leg in front of you. So you might be sitting here. I'm just sitting in the chair, extending my knee. And again, you can choose. Do you want to extend it a little bit? Do you want to extend it all the way? Totally up to you. And then here, what do you notice? Especially if I hold this out here, this side burns so much for me. I can't hold it that long. All right. When you feel ready, you can try the other leg. Again, just noticing what muscles switch on, what muscles feel tired, where you feel this working in your leg. And if you like, you can stand up. So let's keep in our minds, we felt a stretch in the front of our hips when we did this one. We felt along here when we extended the knee. Let's see now if we can try a T. So if you like, you can put yourself into your kickboxing stance. And then you might like to try pushing someone away from you with the bottom of your foot. So you can choose how slow you want to go. You might want to go fast. You might want to do double ups. You might want to just stay slow though. You might like to keep changing legs. You might like to stay on one leg. Totally up to you how you want to practice doing kicks. If you want to practice doing kicks. I'm seeing some good looking kicks happening on the screen. Now see if you can notice those same muscles working while you're doing the kicks. So when I extend my feet, when I extend my knee, I can notice this quad feels like it's working. I can also notice this glute working while my foot is planted. All right. If you like, you can come back to your chair and we'll talk about the third thing that needs to happen. So the third element that makes kickboxing trauma informed is something called interoception. Sorry, we already talked about interoception. The third element is going to be being present. So when we think about being present, typically we think about meditation, about mindfulness. But the other thing that we can do that keeps us fully present are flow-inducing activities. So if you've ever been, you know, doing a sport or at work and just totally lost track of time because you were so absorbed in the task, that's a flow state. And that often happens while we're doing kickboxing. The really cool thing is that when we spend time being present, we activate the areas of the brain that switch off during trauma, and we deactivate the areas that become overstimulated due to trauma. So the default mode network is the area of the brain that causes rumination, and the amygdala is the fear center, and they both become overactive after trauma. And all of these areas are related to learning, to memory, to the way we store memory, to motor patterns, so to doing movements. And they all are engaged when we focus on being totally present in an activity. And doing so, therefore, improves the size of brain structures that shrink due to PTSD, and it increases the activation of areas that deactivate, and it calms down those areas that become overexcited. The problem with meditation, though, and being present in meditation, is it can be re-traumatizing. Sitting and being alone with your thoughts is pretty scary when your thoughts have always been really, really mean. And I suppose is a one way of putting it. So if we make the body instead of the mind the center of our meditation or our mindful practice, then clients or our participants can focus on being present, but they're not being bombarded with trauma thoughts because they're paying attention to their body. And this is what they do in trauma-sensitive yoga. In trauma-informed kickboxing, we get to focus on the body, right? We're constantly talking about what body part you notice while you're kicking, while you're punching, focusing on how the body feels. And because we're so engaged in such an engaging task, right, we're focusing on not falling over, we're focusing on punching and kicking. In my program, we do exercises where we work with a partner and we have to respond to the techniques that they're telling us to do. We're so engaged when we do tasks like that. We enter into flow states, which tends to mean that you get to spend a whole hour, or however long the class goes for in any kind of trauma-informed class, but focused on being present and not thinking about what happened in the past and what happened later. And that is so good for everyone's brain, but that is especially good for when you've experienced trauma. So if you like, we have got time to experiment with some intensity intervals. So if you like, you could stand up again. Now, it is totally okay if you don't know anything other than the kick we just learned. You can just repeat the kick for your intensity, but have a think about what might feel like intensity for you. You can do any other things if you know more things, if you want to do punching and you want to do kicking and you want to make it into like a kickboxing flow, whatever feels like intensity for you. We're going to try 10 seconds and then we're going to come back to our body, ground ourselves, try to focus on breathing, focus on the ground, whatever feels good for you. Oftentimes it doesn't feel good to focus on breathing, I should say, if you have got a trauma background. So you might like to focus on your feet on the floor in between. But let's see if we can stay in our body for the 10 seconds of intensity and then calm our nervous system back down in the recovery. So if you like, we can start in 3, 2, 1, go. So you've got 10 seconds, whatever feels like intensity for you. And you can rest. So here you might like to wiggle your toes. Notice your feet on the floor. Maybe you notice your heart beating. I often feel my carotid pulse in the side of my neck throbbing.
And when you're ready, you could hop back into your kickboxing stance. And we can try it again. So 3, 2, 1, go. So whatever feels like intensity for you. And this round, see if you can stay present. See if you can stay noticing what's happening in your body. And rest, good. So one thing that I like to try when we're grounding here, focus on your feet, I'm just gonna talk at the same time for today's presentation, is picking a different body part in each intensity interval. So we're gonna do one more, and see if you can notice your glutes working the whole time while you're doing the intensity intervals. So if you like, you can hop back into stance. And we're going to go in 3, 2, 1, go. So noticing, seeing if you notice the glutes. And rest, good. So you might like to wiggle your toes, come back into the room. And if you like, you can come back to your chair. So within an hour to explain everything and go through it, I hope that gives you a bit of an idea about how we would go about incorporating choice, interoception and being present into a trauma-informed kickboxing class. But I really think you're going to see much more of trauma-informed kickboxing in the next 5 years. I think that the more we understand trauma physiology, the better our sporting performance is going to be and the better we're going to be as martial artists with friends and students. And as I said, interoception, choice and being present are the keys to making kickboxing trauma-informed. But just also be aware that you might get triggered and that's okay if that does happen. So I have just put up here everywhere you can get in contact with me. I'm on Instagram, I'm on Facebook, you can go to my website. But like I said in the beginning of this presentation, I am so grateful that you wanted to give up an hour of your time at the Embodiment Conference to come listen to me. I think it's amazing. I love that you're a part of this trauma-informed kickboxing movement and I want to keep going. So if you go to this website here, which is my website /TEC, the Embodiment Conference, and hopefully we can put a link in the chat, it'll take you to a landing page and you can book a one-on-one session with me for free. Right. If you want to try kickboxing, I want to chat to you about maybe a bit about what physiologically is happening for you right now. So if you have any pain or injuries or, you know, are you prone to dissociation? Are you prone to hyperarousal, flashbacks? I don't want to hear about the trauma itself. I'm not a psychologist, but we can get a bit of an idea for how kickboxing should look like for you. And then we can do a session together. And if you like it, then, you know, you might want to join my online class, but there's no obligation to do that. I really just want to give back and say, thank you for giving up an hour of your time. Here is an hour of my time. And any psychologists or therapists who are thinking that this is the kind of thing that they might like to refer their clients to, you can go to the same link. There's a video explaining how to book yourself in to chat with me about how that looks like. I really, really want to meet you too. I want to meet everyone who's interested in this. So follow that link. If the link doesn't work for you, I'm really sorry. I tried very hard to make sure it would work. Hit me up on Facebook, Instagram, send me an email. You will be able to get in contact with me through the conference, but I think there's a few things popping up in the chat that I want to address.
Yeah, there are a few questions still about some books. Any books you would recommend?
I got interested in doing this work by reading The Body Keeps the Score. So I highly recommend that book. The other book I would recommend is the Trauma Sensitive Yoga book. I suppose if you were looking at teaching a class like this, that's when it would be relevant. If you have trauma and you're looking at getting into it, it's maybe less relevant for you. In which case, the other book that I've been loving just lately that I think is such good for life lessons is called Chop Wood, Carry Water. I spoke about it on the panel. I can't think of what the author's name is, but if you search Chop Wood, Carry Water, I think it'll come up on Google. It's just a really, really lovely book about sports psychology, positive mindset, and just how to fall in love with the process of doing things instead of always been focusing on the outcome at the end, which at the end of the day is, I think, kind of the key to life.
So there's hardly any time to answer all the questions. So I would like to go to a wrap up of the session. So what I'll do the next part is I'll do some announcements, and then after the announcements, I come back to you for the closing words. Yeah. People, Georgia Ferry, her traumainformedkickboxing.com website is on the chat. You can find her presentation on the chat as well. You can find her on Facebook and some other backgrounds, and her email. So check her out. Ask her more questions offline. Reach out to her because she's very well informed. And I'm definitely going to follow up on the book, Georgia, because it sounds like something that would be interesting to me. As a martial arts teacher, I'm a karate teacher, that makes sense, yeah? Any recording that we make at the conference and also here now at the Martial and Healing Arts will be available on our Facebook group, Tech Martial and Healing Arts. Check it out because you can then see her for 48 hours if you want to be more informed and maybe have the presentation yourself. That's also here in the link. Our next session will be at 10 a.m. UK time by Tord Helsingen, Mindful Relief for Chronic Pain. Also very interesting. And I think pain is one of the things that if you do hardcore martial arts is that you want to find that threshold that you can expand your reach, but you're still safe to do that. So an interesting topic. This wouldn't be possible without our sponsorship by Rafe Kelly. So check him out, evolvemoveandplay.com. Yes, and until the end of this conference, we have a 50% discount. I think it's a good offer, good value for money if you want to have all the presenters available. We have some really epic people, and I had Clark Gracie in the session, so check him out. Really good people on the martial and healing arts session, also on Qigong and also other martial arts, but also a lot on healing and how you can work with your body and be more mindful and more present. Definitely topics that Georgia also, brushed. But I think if you want to know more, she can bring you up to speed, check her out, do her sessions. Young, skilled, and present. Georgia, thank you for being here with us. The closing word is for you.
No, thank you. Thank you so much for the opportunity. Like I said, thank you so much to everyone who's come along. If you have any trouble finding that link or any of my stuff, search me on Facebook, search me somewhere. But yeah, I think let's keep this movement going. Like I said, I think in 5 years, this is going to be really, really mainstream. So if you want to come and be a part of the start of it, then I would absolutely love to have you or to just chat to you about it or how you could get involved in your local community if face-to-face is more reasonable for you or you know, it's more attractive to you than online. But I am loving teaching this program online. It works really, really well. So very convenient for COVID times as well. But yeah, thank you so much, everyone. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Roma, for hosting. Thank you to Mark.
Two takeaways, like a few sentences, your two takeaways for the people, and we're making an embodiment book after the conference. So any quote or phrase you would like to say, we'll add it.
I think the first one is don't beat yourself up about your trauma response. Survival is always your body's number one priority, and survival will always override logic. And the second thing is when you think about being in your body, if you've experienced trauma, try and find more active ways of doing that, right? Try and have something to focus on, like kickboxing or painting or acting or dancing or moving, but have something that you can focus on that's not just mindfulness meditation, because I think that sometimes that can be too overwhelming to start with. So find your passion. Find your passion and don't beat yourself up so much.
Beautiful closing words. Thank you, Georgia, for being here with us.
Thank you. Thank you so much, everybody.
Thank you all.